Welcome to the March 13th regular board meeting of the Board of Trustees of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District. The board met in closed session and discussed pending litigation. Let's begin with a consensus on the order of business. Is there a consensus on the order of business?
Yes.
Okay, we'll go ahead. Let's go ahead with item number 4.04, approval of minutes for February 27th. Would someone like to make a motion on that?
I move the approval of the minutes.
So we have a motion and a second to approve the minutes of February 27th. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries 6-0. I would announce that Mrs. Roger is ill this evening, and so she will not be attending the meeting. So let's move on to item number 5.01, mock trial winners. And that would be Dr. Prater, I believe.
We have some amazing student, future student prosecutors in our midst, or defenders, one or the other, and we thought it was a wonderful opportunity this evening for our San Luis Obispo High School and Laguna Middle School students who participated in mock trial. They are champions. They are quite amazing, sort of like a dynasty, and so you're going to have an opportunity to hear from them this evening, and students, I just would love for you to share with the board what actually you accomplished, what you attribute your success to, and what you look forward to as next steps to keep this dynasty rolling.
All right. mock trial is... Oh, okay. So mock trial is essentially a simulated trial. So each year the Constitutional Rights Foundation gives middle schoolers and high schoolers across the state of California a mock trial case with... Each year there's a constitutional issue, so this year there was a Fourth Amendment issue as the pretrial motion, and every other year it's a murder case. So this year was a first-degree murder, so that's always, I don't know, fun and interesting. And yeah, so that's, and then so we try the case by breaking up into prosecution and defense, and we assign roles. So some people are attorneys and some people are witnesses, and then we supply a clerk and bailiff, and we go against other schools. So like our like slow high prosecution would go against Arroyo Grande defense, and you're scored by a panel of attorneys and paralegals on your performance, and whoever has the most points as, you know, for performance, they win the competition. Does anyone have anything else to say?
There is a little presentation if you want to
And could I ask, could I have you each introduce yourselves along with your coaches?
Yes, I am Lauren Hatcher.
I'm Addie Neuschmidt.
I am Olivia Robertson.
William Hastings for the people.
Oh my God.
Hold down here.
My name is Carson Diesta. McKenna Swithin.
And these are two represented the middle school. But, okay, this is the high school.
Yeah, so coaches. I'm Christy Burleson from Slow High. I'm going to be taking these fine people to state finals.
I'll be taking these fine young high schoolers to state finals this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and we'll be competing for, I guess, state rights, bragging rights. Yeah.
I'm Carol Nelson Selby, and I've coached actually at both of these schools, but the last 4 years, I believe it is, I've been at Laguna Middle School, and we have had so much fun building the skills in these middle school students so they can go on to high school and college, not just to do mock trial, but to be really good, sharp thinkers and able to reason well. I think these are traits that are going to do them a lot of good in their lives. So we really believe in the program. That's why we put so much into it.
I'm Michael Burrell, and I've been at Laguna. We started the program back in 2011, and they've been great. We've never done worse than second. In fact, we've won the championship 5 times for the county, so we're doing really well.
I'm Eric Benitez Foster. I know all of them, most of them. Yes, we're missing some of our coaches, Susan Boatman and Bill Powell and Karen Smith. Also, they help us to lead these kids into championships and everything. So thank you, guys. Thank you.
Do you have a
do you want me to? Sure. All right. So St. Louis was mock trial. What is mock trial? I kind of went over these points. But so throughout the trial, it is generally like a real trial in that you call the witnesses, and as an attorney, you direct examination. You direct exam, I guess, your own witnesses, and you conduct a cross-examination on the other team's witnesses. So a lot of this is extemporaneous. Would you like to?
Yeah, sure. So a common misconception about mock trial is that they tend to think that it's scripted and there's not a lot going on in the moment, but that couldn't be more wrong. So essentially, you are given a role as a witness, and you have to become that person, and you have to react the way to questions that either on direct examination or cross-examination that are given to you like that character would. So it becomes tremendously more complicated in that regard. So it isn't like a play. It is, as hard as it can be, trying to simulate an actual court trial, and that's what makes it so difficult and requires so much skill.
Yeah. Yeah, so basically we have a fact situation and all the depositions for the witnesses along with like a simplified list of objections, and that is essentially our library for the case. So anything found in that packet in any of the witness statements is, I guess, free game for questions. So there's always something fun and interesting that comes up. So yes, we won the county competition. That was very fun.
You guys beat Templeton. That's,
we did.
And
this is the second time we've been in 10 years, the last time being 6 years ago, correct me if I'm wrong? Yeah. And this could not have been possible without the Slo County Mock Trial Committee, the Black and Gold Boosters, and Mr. O'Connor and Slo High ASB. Without any of them, this could not have been possible. And our team this year includes Landis Blakely, Sarah Borgart, Ingrid Chen, Lulu Dye, Abigail Dorman, William Hastings, myself, Augusta Holyfield, Abigail Howe, Ved Kanjale, Tanvi Kanjale, Basil Lloyd Moffitt, Faith Marshall, Addie Neuschmidt, Isabella Osgood, Alessandra Rizzo, Olivia Robertson, right here, the lovely Ratik Shinglot, Isabel Wilson, and Steven Zagrodny. And there we are at a scrimmage, looking dapper as always. There are a couple of our seniors on our defense team. They're pictures. And yeah, thank you so much for all your support. We could not have done this without you guys.
Chris, I have two quick questions.
So board may have some questions for you. So Mr. Buckman first.
So first, where are the finals? Where are you headed?
They're in Anaheim.
In Anaheim. Okay. And mm-hmm. then do you get the information ahead of time so you can prepare, or do you walk up there and you walk into this cold?
The case packet?
Yes,
so we
please.
Get the case packet in like August or September, so we spend like 2 or 3 months preparing everything. So at this point it's making like final changes and edits.
Great, thank you.
Any other questions from the board? Well, seeing none, obviously, we just want to congratulate you guys on your tremendous victory and wish you well in Anaheim. Good luck. Thank you very, very much for representing us in our district.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, let's move on to item number 5.02, student representatives to the board. Who would like to go first? Rotique's going first.
Good evening, everyone. Full house tonight. Third trimester is in full swing at Slo High, and third trimester of senior year usually means that our schedules are full of electives. Senior year has given me more, this third trimester has given me more time to focus on things that really matter. My shirt. And it's also March is National Kindness Month, and that kind of ties into the Stop Bullying Now signs that I noticed, and I'm not going to make any assumptions as to what those mean. But Reach Club on campus, ran by Mrs. Sawyer, our librarian, has taken upon themselves to encourage wellness and kindness in general on campus. This month they're running something called a kindness card drive, I guess, where a student can write a card to another student, basically complimenting them and writing nice things in general, which will then be delivered to that student. It can be anonymous. It can have your name on it. And that's just encouraging. And they encourage all students to write at least one card to another student. And that's to encourage kindness in general and, of course, promoting well-being on campus. Reach Club has taken a lot of steps to promote wellness, and they've approached stress regarding finals, stress regarding tests, and a lot of things very in a really good way. It's a complicated issue, wellness in general, but they led by Mrs. Sawyer and Lily Svedich in ASB, they tackled the problem, and the Stop Bullying Now, kind of speaking to that, I'd also like to say that Link Crew and ASB has also done steps, we've also taken steps to address the sense of community on campus. We have lunchtime activities. We have intramurals. Link Crew had freshman integration, and we've integrated transfers and brought them together at lunch too, so they can meet new people. Bullying at Slo High, if you can give me a second to talk about this, it's something that our ASB does take very seriously. Excuse me. We work every single day to increase our sense of community on campus by having those lunchtime activities, as I was mentioning before, and having intramurals, and having mental health awareness weeks. It is not something to take lightly, and after the recent events, which I'm sure are going to be talked about today, we've taken more importance. We talked about it at our Tuesday meeting today. And I make a promise to all the parents out there that we are doing our best to make sure that nothing like this is occurring on our campus, and I'm sure administration is doing it the same as well. On that note, tomorrow at 10 a.m., students will walk out of their classrooms in support of school safety, in support of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas victims, and in support of students finally having a voice. Some of our students, I will be speaking, we have 17 volunteers who will represent each victim, and we also have Minori Jagia reciting a poem. This will last for 17 minutes, and students will return to class promptly. The whole point of this walkout, I mentioned it at the last meeting, but the whole point of this walkout is to just show that students in general really care about their lives and really care about their voices being heard, and I really hope that across the nation, our representatives here, that we are not a silent bunch, and our generation is going to be the generation that causes change. Completely pivoting, FFA went to state last week, and excuse me for that. FFA went to state last week, and they took state finals. Their Parley Pro team did very well as our other teams regarding ag business and such. Our FFA is tremendous, and we thank the Aggie backers for supporting them so much, because they do tremendous every single year in state and nationals. And once again, mock trial this weekend will be going to Anaheim. The undefeated mock trial team, shall I say. Those are amazing students standing in the back, and getting to know them these past 4 years has really been what's made me such a loud speaker, and made me, because I always have my coach yelling, you need to speak louder, you need to speak slower. And so thank you to Mock Trial, and thank you for these 4 years. If you have any questions regarding the walkout to the board members, please email me, contact me in any way. If you want to know why I'm walking out tomorrow at 10 a.m., if you want to send me a video of the walkout itself if you can't make it because of the Brown Act I talked about. But So, yeah, no, once again, thank you for your support throughout these years. And I know you guys will continue to support us students and really care for our lives. So thank you.
Great. Thank you, Roti. Is there any questions from the board? Seeing none, let's move on.
Hello. I know the name tag says Zoe Ashworth, but my name is Annalise Dempsey. I'm from Morro Bay High School, ASB, and I was asked to step in this evening. I'm actually going to be next year's ASB president, so you'll probably be hearing more from me. So hello, nice to meet you. I'm also here with Taylor Joller. She will be our ASB's vice president, so make sure to say hello to her. I have some notes that I was asked to read off today because I was asked to step in pretty last minute, so I will go ahead and read those to all of you. So in regards to our classrooms, on Wednesday, Ms. Heights' anatomy students perform muscle fitness tests to distinguish between muscle groups that provide power versus endurance. In honor of Black History Month, World History held a student work showcase in the cafeteria on Wednesday to wrap up a month of studying imperialism in Africa. The students made Congolese-inspired masks and repurposed the rhyme scheme in syllabic rhyme from White Man's Burden to celebrate Native American African heritage and critique the harsh rule of imperialism. Jazzy Orzoco and Eric Cruz won first place for their honored mask design. Faye Vavra and Hannah Likes won first place at the Estero Bay Women's Art Competition, which was held on Tuesday, February 20th. This Thursday is the opening night for the production of Little Shop of Horrors by the MBHS Theater. The play will be held through Saturday night in the cafeteria at 7:30 p.m. On May 4th, the MBHS English Learner Advisory Committee will be holding their third annual Cinco de Mayo celebration and scholarship fundraiser for graduating English learners. In terms of news, last week we held our annual week and free smoothies fun spirit days such as Neon Day, Aloha Friday, and Beachwear Day. We finished off the week with the Neon Island Dance in the big gym with DJ Solstice. The dance was extremely successful, and we're excited to plan the next one. In 2 weeks, we will be holding a March Madness basketball tournament with 3-on-3 games during lunch. Sports. The boys' golf team won their first all-league tournament championship in 10 years, winning by an impressive 24 strokes. Mac Daugherty shot a 29 to win the individual medal by 10 strokes. The team followed that up with a win at third place in Nipomo and now sit atop the LPL standings in first place. The San Luis Obispo Council of Government's Safe Routes to School program and sponsored by the San Luis Obispo County Air Pollution Control District came to MBHS on Wednesday to give away a free bike and helmets to the students participating in the free raffle. Chrissy Kroll won the bike and new helmet, and Zoe Makowetsky and Willow Bentoncourt won new helmets. Tomorrow at 9:45 a.m., Morro Bay High School will also be participating in the walkout. We had to change the time because we didn't want it to interfere with our nutrition times because we really wanted to make an impact and show that we are also want our voices to be heard, and essentially for the same reasons Rutique already covered. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anybody from the board who has any questions? Great. Well, thank you both so much. We really appreciate it. As always, you're welcome to stay, and we actually welcome your comments during the board meetings. Otherwise, of course, we understand that you have work that you might need to do, and please feel free to leave. But thank you very much. Let's move on to item number 6.01, which is correspondence. The board did receive a letter from Erica Baltodano regarding an incident related to the arrest of a San Luis Obispo High School student. And now we'll move on to public comment. The first thing I'd like to do is just get a consensus from the board on the amount of time. Typically, our public comment would be capped at 20 minutes. However, we have a number of people who have wished to speak. Is it the board's consensus that we go ahead and extend the time to allow all the speakers to have their opportunity?
My question is, how many speakers do we have before I...
I believe we have 10. Yeah.
So that would make 30 minutes. Add 10 minutes to the... Mm-hmm. I would have an interest in adding that 10 minutes, okay, so each speaker would get there.
Actually, we have 12 now.
You have 12.
So about 36 minutes, if everyone speaks to 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
I think we should allow them all their 3 minutes.
Okay. All right, good. So the board's consensus is that we will take everybody who has a yellow form up here. So before we start, there is a statement I'd like to read. The district's goal at this board meeting is to have open communication regarding district practices and to address the community's concern. We will allow time for public comment, and we understand that many of you may be here to respond to what you've read in the papers. However, please understand that the board and the district are beholden to state and federal laws to protect and keep student information confidential. While we understand the community's desire for information, the district is not able to share what's happening with a particular student while it's investigating and determining the appropriate response for a student's alleged acts. Providing a safe school environment for our students and staff continues to be the district's top priority. We continue to work closely with law enforcement, other local officials, parents, and others to investigate and address any safety concerns on our campuses. And then just a couple of other things I'd just like to remind folks that we will allow a maximum of 3 minutes per comment, and there will be a timer up there. So you'll have an opportunity to see how long you have. At the end of 3 minutes, I will ask you to stop your comments. This is in fairness to other people who may wish to speak. So I wanted to let you know about that. Also, materials, if you have written materials that you'd like to present, you can either give them to Mrs. Holmes and the board will get copies of them, or we have a document camera there that you can use. Any questions that you may ask would be answered either by me or referred to staff members for a reply. And then questions requiring investigation could be referred to the board or administrative staff for study and response at a future meeting. A speaker may offer criticism of school operations and programs that concern them, but in public session, the board won't hear personal complaints of school personnel or complaints against any employee of the system. We do have other channels to provide the board for its consideration and disposition of complaints involving individuals. And with that, Mrs. Sheffer will call the names, and
may I make a suggestion that we call names and groups?
Yes.
All right,
yes,
great,
absolutely.
I'm going to call three names at a time so that three people can kind of line up so we can do this as efficiently as possible. And these are in the order received. So the first three speakers will be Ellen Sturtz, Doug Hoyman, and then Michelle Call. And your time will start as soon as you begin speaking. And if you would please state your name when you first approach. Thank you.
Good evening. My name's Ellen Sturtz. I live in the district, and I've been asked by the local chapter of Bend the Arc to read this to you tonight. We are writing to you as the co-chairs of Bend the Arc, SLO, a local chapter of a national Jewish social justice organization, and as residents of San Luis Obispo. We are unable to attend your board meeting scheduled this week. However, we wanted you to know that we view this hate crime incident very differently than Dr. Eric Prater apparently does. The superintendent is quoted in the Tribune as saying that this is an aberration. We don't believe that this is true if viewed as part of a disturbing continuum. This particular case is deemed a hate crime by law enforcement, but there has been other very disturbing behaviors exhibited by students in the district recently that need to be addressed from a holistic perspective rather than from the perspective of individual events taken in isolation. We know that there have been reports of anti-Semitism, anti-Muslim sentiments, anti-LGBTQIA occurrences, bullying, etc., at several schools, and that although not viewed legally as crimes, all of these actions fall into what we perceive to be a continuum of behaviors that occur when there is no priority for the inclusivity and respect for all individuals are not top priorities. As concerned citizens, we believe that you as trustees of the district administrators need to be seen much more proactive in your approach to these types of behaviors in general. And you need to put your efforts and resources into providing better training for yourselves, the administrators and faculty, and the staff of your K-12 schools. We hope that the school district will analyze where it can strengthen its internal training program, implement appropriate activities focused on tolerance and respect for others that will be scheduled soon at all schools, and put adequate district resources into all of these efforts. We urge you not to view this latest incident in isolation and to take action quickly. Sincerely, Susan Dressler, Barry Price, and Ellie Axelroth. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Doug Hoyman.
Good evening, President Unger and school board members. My name is Douglas Hoyman. I represent three organizations: Central Coast Coalition for Inclusive Schools, Trans Central Coast, and the Gay and Lesbian Alliance of the Central Coast. Matias Bernal, the president of GALA, and John Elfers, the chair of Central Coast Coalition for Inclusive Schools, were unable to attend this meeting and asked me, as chair of Trans Central Coast, to appear on their behalf. As well as everyone else, our organizations were shocked by the hate crime arrest on March 1st. We are very concerned for the victim, but we are also concerned for the perpetrator. Our organizations have been informed that this perpetrator has bullied the current victim on numerous occasions before the alleged assault, and that this same perpetrator has a history, possibly spanning several years, of bullying other victims. Why was this student not held responsible for his earlier actions so this incident did not rise to the point of involving the criminal justice system? Tonight, I'm hand-carrying a joint letter addressed to President Unger from our three organizations with accompanying data. There's a package for each board member. In this letter, we urge the board to act quickly, decisively, to address this very serious situation. We have three main requests. Immediately hire an independent investigator. This investigator should be tasked with investigating the district's policies and actions pursuant to AB 9, informally known as CESS Law, which took effect July 1st, 2012. It was passed to address discrimination, harassment, intimidation, bullying, and violence in California public schools. Also investigating the current actions and report all findings to the community as well as the board. Number two, our second request is to immediately improve the district's uniform complaint process. The current process leaves much to be desired and does not follow the spirit of this law. For instance, just as early as this morning, searching the district's website for the phrase uniform complaint, no results were found. When searching the word complaint, one is directed to food services. This is totally unacceptable. In addition, what good is a process when the majority of students, parents, and staff do not even know it exists? So the district could easily add a box to its homepage that, when clicked upon, could take the individual to a uniform complaint form and the district policies and information about that complaint form. One information that needs to be addressed is that the student victim or parents, if they choose not to file a formal complaint, anyone with knowledge of an incident, such as a teacher, staff member, or friend, has the right to file that uniform complaint. Our third request is in the letter and relates to a June 2nd joint letter that we sent June 2nd, 2017. We have not been responded to. So we implore the board to respond to our requests, listen to your community, not only because our organizations are making this request, because you have legal and ethical responsibilities to the children to whom you serve.
Thank you, Mr. Hoyman. If you'd give the letter to Mrs. Holmes, then the board will absolutely get a copy of it.
Next will be Michelle Call, followed by Kane Randolph and Amy Good. So if the others would line up, please.
First of all, I just want to say thank you for all that you were talking about the inclusiveness things you're going to be doing at school. May I ask that when those cards are sent out, you make sure that the kids that might not normally be included also get them, because that's my first thought, is that my kid might not get one of those and then would feel badly. So if you guys, you know, make sure that end of things is taken care of as well, that would be super appreciated. Okay, so first of all, I just want to say I'm incredibly grateful for the services that we've received at Laguna Middle School. We found everybody from Principal Calandro to the cafeteria staff have cheerfully made accommodations for my child related to autism, and there was a bullying incident earlier in the year, which they dealt with fabulously. I was truly pleased and amazed. I have not one complaint about the school. I do have some concerns due to the recent hate crime level bullying, which the high school clearly did not deal with appropriately. After hearing from the mother last night when she called in on the radio show, it was really clear to me that something is not going right here. So to be clear, I don't know the individuals involved in the current incident, and I don't need to know. I certainly don't want protected information. What I would like to know is, I'd like it to be made public what complaints of bullying the school has received in a school year, how do they deal with it, how do they follow up, what support do they offer to the bully and the victim. If this really has been happening for 5 years and there are potentially other kids who need help, we can't just let it stand. So I believe there are several things that we can do for the better. The first is cultural and disability sensitivity training. How do people with autism behave during moments of anxiety or when they're overwhelmed? How can we de-escalate instead of increasing the behaviors? Mentoring the bullies. We need to find out why a person's bullying another and work with them to improve, ideally through peer mentoring, in my opinion. And then increase the number of counselors at the high school so they can do their jobs better. It's my understanding that no amount of counselors are mandated for a particular school, but I think that if there are more, then they're likely to do a better job. So I also am a member of the Central Coast Coalition for Inclusive Schools, and I highly urge you to read the packet and think about what changes might be possible, and I offer myself to help in any way that's necessary.
Thank you, Mrs. Carr.
Thank you. Kane Randolph.
Hi, my name is Kane Randolph. I'm an autism rights activist and a survivor of the San Luis Obispo County school system. The fact that this bullying went to the level of hate crime is not a surprise to me, nor is it that the school system didn't intervene. In fact, during my time through the system, the teachers themselves are the ones responsible for the bullying and even assault that I experienced. So to hear that it's a continual problem, I'm not surprised. Just like the woman before me just said, there are a number of things you can do to improve it. You just have to have the will to do what you need to do. And if you don't continue doing anything, what's going to happen to the next kid? Will it be a hate crime? Or will he, or will you find him with a receipt for a rope in his pocket, in his pockets? We don't know. And whether or not you, that happens is your choice. Have a good day.
Thank you very much.
Next is Amy Good, followed by Marika Van Bearden and Officer Joshua Walsh.
Hi, I'm Amy Goad. I'm a professional that works in disability services. I'm also a member of the Central Coast Coalition for Inclusive Schools. And I just wanted to add that the research shows that students with autism are bullied more often than students without disabilities, so that's important to remember. And that being bullied is correlated with higher levels of depression, anxiety, loneliness, and then also has been shown to have a negative impact on academic performance. So hopefully through inclusion efforts and building empathy in the students, in all students, then we can see a decline in bullying and some protective peer groups. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Marika Van Bearden.
Hi, my name is Marika Van Bearden. I'm speaking to you tonight to address the issue of violence and bullying that have become prevalent in our schools today. I work in the education field. I'm an early childhood special education teacher and a behavior specialist for the Head Start Toddler and Preschool program, which, as many of you know, serves low-income children and their families. On a daily basis, I help teachers to solve problems in their classrooms. Problems with individual children who are just starting to learn critical skills, such as turn-taking, sharing, and making friends. I see firsthand where mental health issues can get their start in these early years, especially if the underlying issues that these children face are not addressed. However, these children leave our centers at age 5, and then they are in your hands, the school district. In the Head Start program, we have a full curriculum that centers around social-emotional learning, in addition to core academics. Does this exist in the elementary, middle school, or high school level? I know that the same curriculum that we use, which is called the Second Set program, is available for K through 5 and middle school, which are crucial years on those social-emotional skills which are started in preschool. Some information that is directly taken from the Second Step website, which I encourage you all to take a look at, is as follows. Children need social-emotional skills to thrive, both in the classroom and in life. Social-emotional learning curricula teach children techniques to gain confidence, set goals, make better decisions, collaborate with others in work and play, and navigate the world more effectively. Social-emotional learning concepts provide an extra dimension to education, focusing on improving cooperation, communication, and decision-making. In a world where emotional intelligence is critical for lifelong happiness, successful careers, and healthier relationships, social-emotional learning gives students a framework for developing these skills. My suggestion would be for our school district to take the initiative and start to address these issues from the beginning. Stop the problem before it starts, and not as a reaction after the problem occurs. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Van Burden.
Next, we have Officer Joshua Walsh, followed by Ashley Smith and Kristen Kent, please.
Good evening. My name is Officer Walsh with the San Luis Obispo Police Department. I'm here as a representative of the department's Policing and Community Together team. So we understand that hate crimes and hate expression, how they affect the victims as well as the community. And so we encourage people to come forward and report these incidents. It's best to either report them to your local law enforcement agency, or if you prefer to remain anonymous, you can use Crime Stoppers, which is the county's website, or you can use the hotline, which is 1-800-549-STOP. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Ashley Smith.
Hello again. My name is Ashley Smith, and I was just coming to follow up from our last board meeting and to apologize for my children's shenanigans at the last board meeting. But I wanted to also thank Kimberly for getting in touch with me and also Student Services for being so awesome and answering questions that I had proposed at the last meeting. And speaking with Kimberly, I learned that you will also get a copy of her findings that she found. And I also spoke with our principal at Del Mar, and I learned about the school safety teams that each campus has. I am a little concerned about the size of these safety teams. They're only about 4 to 6 people, and that cover the whole campus. And the majority of the people on that safety team are the principal and the office workers. So during a lockdown situation, half of the safety team is in the office. So that really limits the amount of aid that would be available to other students in different classrooms. So as a board, I'm hoping that you look at these notes and you think, is this enough? And also the first aid kits. Our first aid kits are pretty awesome compared to other states because we are California and we have Diablo and earthquakes, but they could use some help and they also didn't have any tourniquets in it. So I am hoping that you as a board can support me in raising the percentage of our teachers who are CPR and first aid certified and how we can get these trauma kits in every classroom. Each site does have some trauma first aid kits, but they aren't in every classroom. They are around the campuses, is what I learned. There's about 5 per campus. So in a lockdown, again, those aren't accessible to people who would need that type of first aid. So I am just coming to you as a parent and a helper. I just want to help to, and a PTA member, of how we can get these trauma kits in every classroom and how we can help get our teachers and our staff CPR certified. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Smith.
Next we have Kristen Kent, who will be followed by Abby Lassen and then Jeffrey Brecht. Excuse me if I mispronounce the name.
Good evening. My name is Kristen Kent. I live in Los Osos. I'm a high school teacher in a district in the area, but not this district. I've been teaching for about 25 years. I'm also here representing the Central Coast Coalition for Inclusive Schools. Up until June, I was the advisor for the Gay-Straight Alliance at the school where I've been teaching for 14 years. And I'm here to request that this board put their resources into providing mandatory training for district administration, site administration, faculty, and staff with regards to Seth's Law, which provides protections to LGBTQ students and students with disabilities. What I find when I talk to my colleagues, and granted this is a different district, Most of them don't even know that CESS law exists, much less that they are obligated as teachers to intervene when they experience or when they witness bullying. And I do know that some educators consider this to fall under our obligation as mandated reporters. Therefore, I think it's critical that the district provide training for all of your personnel. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Abby Lassen.
Good evening. My name is Abby Lassen, and I speak tonight as a co-chair of the Community Affairs Council under the auspices of the Jewish Community Center of Federation of San Luis Obispo. The Community Affairs Council consists of representatives from various Jewish, educational, legal, and diversity organizations working together to promote respect for differences in our county. I should also add on a personal note that I have an interest in the promoting the prevention of bullying and harassment of students due to my current work regarding disabled persons, my past employment as an educator for students with autism, and as a parent of a daughter with several disabling conditions. The purpose of my remarks is to offer resources in support of the objective of improving the school climate for all students, and especially for those with disabilities at San Luis High, by training staff and students regarding both the prevention of and appropriate response to incidents of harassment and bullying. The Anti-Defamation League offers several types of anti-bias training, including a World of Difference Institute and No Place for Hate. Its website, www.adl.org, has many resources under the heading Education, including Responding to Cyber Hate, Toolkit for Action, and a lesson plan, Cyberbullying, Understanding and Addressing Online Cruelty. ADL's regional office in Santa Barbara's phone number is 564-6670. Also, the advocacy organization, Disability Rights California, has on its website a publication, Bullying and Disability Harassment for Students with Disabilities. It concisely outlines a school district's legally mandated duties and students' rights when she's targeted by a bully, and even includes sampled letters. The website for Disability Rights California is www.disabilityrightscalifornia.org, and its phone number is 1-800-776-5746. I look forward to hearing what steps you will be taking to develop a strategy to create a welcoming and safe school for all students. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lassen.
Next, we have Jeffrey Speck, followed by, I'm having trouble reading the first name, but the second last name is Richardson, and then followed by Holly Holnoy. Thank you.
Good evening. Jeffrey Specht, class of 1982. Go Tigers. I'm here this evening, like many others, discussing the bullying situation. And in this day and age, when I went to school here, you may have somebody would shove you or say something mean. That's not a big deal. Is and isn't. In this day and age, we have children that are carrying guns and bringing guns and knives to school. And it was brought to my attention a little while back that you no longer have a policeman here on campus during school hours. I would like to know, number one, why? And number two, what can we do to resolve this? I, for one, and I'm sure a lot of parents out there would like to see more of a police presence, kind of preventative maintenance. Children see this, and they're less likely to do what they would if there wasn't a police presence. Anyhow, we have a beautiful town, excuse me, and I'd like to see it safe and kept safe. Anyhow, that will be it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And would you give us your first name, please, when you approach the microphone?
Hi, my first name is Olivia, and I'm going to ask you, because so many people did not... Oh, yeah, sorry. Because so many people did not fill their three-minute time lot, may I possibly go a little bit farther?
No, I'm sorry. You need to complete it in 3 minutes.
Okay, I'll talk as fast as I can. Thank you so much for having me this evening. It's incredibly unfortunate that the task of creating safer schools is left solely up to local governing bodies and organizations, since we cannot afford to wait on Washington to remove the greatest risk. I stand here today, along with the support of Mayor Heidi Harmon, to protect both the physical and emotional safety of the constituents of San Luis Obispo. The purpose of my time here today is to encourage our district to design and implement a proactive school safety policy, one that targets social skill acquisition by creating unique opportunities. Unquestioningly, these goals will help us to achieve the healthiest possible school environments. I am a district special education teacher. My son has high-functioning autism and graduated from Slo High School. I have helped my child cope with bullying, and I have witnessed the missed opportunities when programs within our schools are not in alignment. I believe my real-life perspectives and insights would be of genuine value for this district. I am pleased that our superintendent, Dr. Eric Prater, has already begun making strides to bettering our school security through the creation of this new safety resolution. Thank you for this significant step forward. Recently, our district adopted the popular growth mindset to close the academic achievement gap. We have focused heavily on math, science, and reading with a smattering of focus on the soft skills, such as social-emotional learning or non-cognitive skills, perseverance, and self-control, to name but two. Today, I urge the district to recognize we may have missed an important piece of the growth mindset process. Research has shown that creating safe schools extends far beyond designing buildings with higher fences, video surveillance, and metal detectors. While these are relevant measures, they are reactive strategies. We must now begin to design our proactive strategies. We must stop viewing soft skills as such and instead recognize them as important foundational skills upon which a healthy school community is built. The good news is we have what it takes to achieve this goal. We have a dedicated staff of highly qualified individuals. We have community government willing to provide support in whatever way they can. We have the families willing to commit to holding us accountable to our goals, and we have an ever-expanding population of students growing in diversity. We've created some wonderful programs here in our district, and our students have thrived academically. However, as difficult as this might be to hear, the current model of instruction and teacher mentoring has inadvertently created discrimination. We must begin to create inclusive classrooms that foster and develop the foundational soft skills if we are to strengthen and heal real community within our schools. We currently have two specialty schools, Teach and Pacheco. I ask that we consider designing
a full
inclusion.
Thank you very much. I see that you have written notes.
Yes.
You know, if you give those to Mrs. Holmes, she'll make sure that the board gets a copy of your remarks.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. And next is Holly Holnoy.
It's Holly Holiday.
Oh, thank you. Sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I had something very eloquent written before tonight. I am the mother of the student who was bullied, Ashton, and I met earlier with the assistant superintendent, and they contacted me about 5 hours before tonight's meeting, so I'm going to pretend that it had nothing to do with tonight. Because that's what they told me. It had nothing to do with tonight. What I learned was I don't know that we have any sort of recourse other than what you guys have set out as far as 30-day reporting times and meeting times and reporting back to... as a parent, I left really sad. And feeling kind of like I didn't have any sort of say or any sort of protection for my student in this district. My son is not a threat, and my son has been threatened repeatedly to the point that it went to text message. And then after that text message, he was then threatened outside of his classroom where he was supposed to be safe because I was told that he was going to be safe. And it took the student being arrested by the SLO PD. And I think the SLO PD, and I think the DA, and I think the probation officers were taking it as seriously as they have, because I don't feel like you guys have taken it as seriously as they have. And I thank you, Kim, for meeting with us today. You were wonderful. However, the process is wrong, and the process is long, too long. And there are enough people here tonight, and I'm very humbled, like, the amount of people here tonight who have obviously gone through things that I don't know, and I didn't ask for them to be here, and they're here on their own. I think it speaks volumes about the processes that need to go forward with this district for everybody to feel safe, and not just the 84% that were surveyed. So thank you, everybody, tonight for listening to this, and I hope that we get some silver linings out of this.
Thank you, Mrs. Holliday. Is there anyone else who would like to address the board on an issue that is not on the agenda? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to close public comment, and let's move on to item number 7.01, business and budget update. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, just for the board to know, we have CISC is going to be on site tomorrow, actually at J2. We do our annual health update. So they come in, they talk about insurance. And so we invite all the union presidents from and representatives from CSEA, SEIU, as well as the Teachers Association. So if there's board members that would like to come tomorrow, that is between 10 a.m. and noon. And so, again, they just kind of go over the plans for the following year. The good news, I would say, in terms of that health insurance, is it looks like we have probably the first time in a long time where we have a very small potential increase. So I think only a 1%, where we've been seeing, you know, 6, 7, 10% increases in the past. So that's a positive thing from a budget standpoint, which we'll review. Other than that, I will say that utilities and utility costs, which you'll see in a minute when Mrs. Lang talks about our second interim budget, are kind of through the roof, in particular water bills. And so we have, you know, it's been one of the driest years on record in terms of our county and what's been happening. And so that, on top of increases in water fees and sewer fees, is not just hitting the residents, but it's also, you know, hitting us as a district. So I have instituted monthly meetings with our director of facilities maintenance, as well as our other maintenance staff and supervisors, so that we kind of on a monthly basis are now watching this, monitoring it, to try to bring those costs in line. We did find a couple of leaks at a couple of our sites over the past few months that have helped in terms of you know, getting those fixed, making sure that we know that. So it's something that's definitely going to be on our radar, and on a consistent basis we're going to be looking at it.
Yeah, questions?
Mr. Pinkerton, so in the we instituted that computer surveillance program with our water at the sites. Is that still operating appropriately?
It's still operating. It's a really dry year.
Okay.
So it's something
so
that
bottom line, that's what the issue is.
For the most part, I would say. Yeah.
Okay.
And increased fees.
Yeah.
So the costs themselves are going up.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's something that I think for us as a district, as we look at, you know, our Blue Ribbon Committee and look at our sites, I'm going to be doing some studies and really breaking down our currently, like, Sunnyside, Morrowell, as well as, you know, looking at those sites for what are we truly getting with these bills going up, and, you know, look, kind of really doing a good synopsis of our sites.
Okay,
so, and
you.
Those fees.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing none, let's move on to item 7.02, Ed Services Update. Mrs. McGrath.
Yes, I was excited to tell you about kind of a perfect storm in a beautiful way that's happening around equity. So we've had a team of leaders attending an equity institute throughout the year. They attend a couple of days all throughout the school year, and they've been really excited. They come back super energized about the topics that they're hearing and really kind of questioning their thinking. And the focus is really to look at our practices and policies, especially related to underrepresented students. And what are we doing to ensure that those students are, you know, really feeling equity, right? So this kind of in combination with Dr. Prater's Common Ground Task Force, as well as the Superintendent Student Senate, is going to allow us to create an equity plan. So it's evolving right now. I just kind of wanted to let you know about this equity plan, and I could imagine that we may see the plan and action steps incorporated into our LCAP. So just excited to see where that's going, and you may start to hear some buzz around that. So great things happening for equity.
Great. Thank you very much. Any questions for Mrs. McGrath? Okay. Let's move on to item number 7.03, Measure D update.
So, yeah, we do have our CBOC meeting is this coming Monday, where we meet quarterly to review projects, budgets for our Measure D projects. And so we also have our Measure D study session. This one in particular is focused on safety at our site. So and we've kind of tied in a little bit more than Measure D in terms of looking at our safety plans, those types of things. Kind of the format of the meeting is going to be our kind of district architect, Gary Geary, is going to go through some of the architectural standards for safety at schools and how we're applying some of those at our school sites. I believe we're going to have law enforcement representatives at the meeting as well. From there, Chris Dowler is going to take the board through kind of the history of safety over the past 5-6 years and what we've done and safety plans, those types of things. Then we're going to hear from a few of our principals in terms of their perspectives on safety on their campuses, and then open it up to the board for questions as well as the public for questions. And so hopefully it's an informative day for the board, and we can answer any questions that you have.
I don't see any questions from board members. So let's move on to item 8.01. This is a resolution, 12-17-18, the second interim report for our budget. That would be Mr. Pinkerton.
Good evening. Tonight we are presenting our second interim report, which shows our financial status as of January 31st. And we'll go through some of the highlights and the changes between the first interim and the second interim. Kim, could you pull up the PowerPoint? I thought I just saw it up there. It disappeared. It, but I'll try. Oh, I thought it was already up. Oh, there we go. Okay, there we go. Thank you. Okay, let's see if I. Oh, there we go. Okay, so you can see from this comparison of our first interim and second interim that our revenues went down a little bit, and that is mostly due to our local revenues, which was related to E-rate. We thought we were going to get some money this year in E-rate. Turns out we're not going to get it until next year, so we took it out of this year's budget. You'll probably see it back in the budget for next year. And in the change to the expenditures, as Ryan was saying, the biggest changes occurred in services and operations, and that's where that water that he was talking about is budgeted, and we had to budget quite a bit more there. It's been really, really high. We also had some more contracts that we hadn't budgeted. CCSFA was in there. We have some... the balance of the employee retention is budgeted now, so that's all in there. So that's why that's the big, big difference in services and operations. And then in other outgo, we had some increases to our special ed costs that we pay to the county office for the special ed services that they provide for us. So that's that increase. So overall, it was about $1 million decrease in our ending balance. And you
Julie?
Can see here, yes.
I was just wondering about the difference in the in for certificated salaries.
You know, that is
Is that kind of a normal fluctuation?
Yeah, we analyze this every time we do the report, and we look and we see where we are. There may have been some positions that, for instance, I think the high school has some extra sections in the second part of the year, things like that that come up.
Okay, thank you.
So here, this just kind of details what all those changes were. So you can see the utilities, that was mostly water, almost $460,000 difference in there. The employee retention balance was all in budgeted now. As you know, we've been doing a lot of tree maintenance and some landscaping that's come out of that. And then our special ed contracts and our contract with the county office with special ed has decreased our ending balance a little bit. And, of course, by the time we get to the end of the year, we're going to have carryover, so that's all going to get budgeted back into the ending balance. This is a graph that school services did for all of the districts in our county, and it's a little bit confusing, but I thought it might be worthwhile to to show it. I think our county office wanted us to show it. So what this is showing is the actual increase in revenues compared to increases in STIRS and PERS and our step and column costs. And this is for us in particular as though we were an LCFF district. So you can see in this year, the revenue growth wasn't nearly what the expenditure growth just for those three items were, for PERS and STIRS increase in step and column. Next year, because they fully funded LCFF 2 years before they were supposed to, those districts are going to get a big bump in their revenues next year for 1 year. So if we were LCFF, we'd get about a $500 per ADA increase in our revenues. But then the year after that, it's going to go just to COLA. They're not going to get these big increases anymore. The red arrows on here are where we are projecting our revenues will be. So you can see next year we're not going to get anywhere near that $500 per ADA. I mean, this is based on 3.5% property tax increases. We'll see about $240 probably per ADA for the next 3 years. And you can see that even at that, that is not going to keep up with these increased costs in STIRS and PERS and the health and welfare. I mean, on the step and column. That doesn't even include health and welfare. So some things to consider for the future. We are continuing to budget our property taxes at 3.5% increase with the Diablo depreciation on top of that. As we just talked about, the LCFF is fully funded next year. Our current difference in basic aid funding and LCF funding is about $10.5 million. Next year it's going to go down to about $8.5 million, and we expect it to stay around $8.5 to $9 million. Our ratio of salary to benefits is still at about 84%, which is right where we want it. The governor has talked about giving us some more one-time funding next year. If we end up getting that funding, we project that our salary and benefits will remain at about 84%. But if we don't get that funding, it's probably going to be closer to 85%. And the year after that, it'll go up to 87%. And that's assuming no changes in personnel. Our health and welfare, some good news here is that we're projected with about a 1 to 2% increase next year. That's down from about 5 to 6, 7% in past years. Our workers' comp rates are also going to be down next year. But we also are going to be losing some of our resources that are going to expire at the end of next year. The CTE, the Prop 39 energy, and college readiness all expire at the end of next year. So the good news is we still have enough to maintain our 10% reserve for economic uncertainty for the current year and at least the next 2 years. We're working on getting a new actuarial for our other post-employment benefits. We should have that by the end of this year, I think, so we'll know what our new accrued liability is. Right now we have about $9.3 million in that fund to cover that. Are there any questions on the second interim?
Mr. Bruckman.
Yeah. Kim, I don't know. If on the first slide there was about 118,000 dollars. And I know you talked about the water. And so we're at second interim. Are we expecting that there might be any revenue that's going to change that and make it not as.
Are you talking about the local revenues?
Yes.
Yeah, actually, local revenues include things like billing accounts and things that we don't budget until we get them, so it probably will keep going up. That $118,000 is mainly due to the E-rate taking that out of the budget for this year.
Okay. And I also want to thank you for having that short phone call today.
Sure.
It was really helpful. And on the water, I know we talked about utilities and Measure D, and we want to keep them separate. I don't know, is any of the water increase, is that possible that it's got to do with construction? Are we keeping the dust down? Or?
Yeah, a little bit, but that's not what we're talking about in terms of use, I would say, water-wise.
Okay.
That's, I think more of it has to do with the fact it's irrigation and sewer charge. Again, those three things, increased rates from purveyors, sewer costs, as well as it's just been a super dry year.
Right.
So we're going to have to really look at our fields and, you know, use those meters that Mrs. Sheffer talked about, you know, to our fullest extent possible over the next few months.
Okay.
Unfortunately, it's been raining finally. that should hopefully help.
So that'll help the bottom
line.
Positive. Okay.
On a big perspective, you know, when we talk about this with the board, that's why we do our 10-year budget, right, which kind of lays out the projection aspect of it. So, you know, we never end up spending everything we budget in a current year, and so that's why we put that 10-year budget together, right, to kind of go through and really look at the long-term expenditures. Julie talked a little bit about kind of the progression. So, you know, we have to keep our personnel costs in check. That is the biggest thing. So we have enough money to pay for utilities and new books and, you know, all the other things we need for us to run schools. So in terms of that 10-year budget projection, what it kind of looks like in terms of this year, and we'll see what happens by the end of the year, but I think, you know, we will have a balanced budget, you know, most likely a surplus this year, I would say, by the end of the year, hopefully, and something we're going to watch in terms of from now until the end of the year and do what we can to make that happen. Next year, though, we jump right into a potential deficit situation. Now, on paper right now, that 10-year budget is $3.5 million. I had Julie hold off on putting the one-time dollars that the governor had in the governor's budget in January until we know for sure. So my hope is that in May, in the May revise, that looks like it's potentially about $2 million to the district, which would put us at a next year's deficit of about 1.5. So we've been very fortunate, even as a basic aid school district, these one-time dollars have really kept us going over the past few years and helped us from having to make dramatic cuts. That said, in this coming budget cycle, my hope is to work with Dr. Prater, to work with our cabinet team, to look at about $1 million in personnel reductions in our district to keep in line with those, you know, reductions that we need over time. But we're still working on our foundation, other ways of raising revenues, the mitigation agreement potentially through legislation, and those are all great. And hopefully they come to fruition, and hopefully we receive those revenues. But in terms of for us, and to make sure that we stay at that 85% rate with STRS, PERS, health benefits going up, that's kind of my goal in my mind in terms of where we probably need to be this coming year budget-wise.
And I would just remind people that what you're talking about is one-time money.
The governor's budget,
The governor's budget.
That $2 million would be a one-time.
That you're hoping that will reduce our essentially what will be a structural deficit primarily due to the increased STRS and PERS costs as well as the loss of Diablo Canyon funds. Is that correct?
Yes.
Great. Thank you.
So the hope is, again, using those to, you know, Dr. Prater has some dates put forward to do some public forums to talk about our long-term plan for dealing with the loss of revenue with Diablo Canyon as well as our overall budget situation. So if we can, you know, continue to have that dialogue, Dr. Prater can put that plan together with the board moving forward. So we're trying to not have as many huge dynamic cuts, you know, yet, and try to, you know, utilize those one-time funds, make up some reductions that we need to over the next year so that we have time to kind of make that ongoing plan for where we need to go. So taking it kind of 1 year at a time.
Yeah, Mark.
Just one last thing. So as we look down at the career tech, it's right above the STRS on behalf line, and I noticed that it's gone at the end of 18-19.
Yes.
I've heard some rumors that, and I don't know if you have, that it's going to be refunded.
We'll see.
Have you heard some rumors?
They've talked about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've got my fingers crossed.
Yeah. So we'll see. Some of those one-time funds, the adult education, some of those things are kind of right now short-term ending as of a time. So I don't want to count dollars until we know for sure that we have them, which is why I'm holding off a little bit right now on the 10-year budget with that one-time funds. So far, the economy seems like it's good. February was down a little bit, but overall, the state has done really well this fiscal year, and so hopefully that continues through May. We have our good May revise, and we receive those monies, which will definitely help us not have to make dramatic reductions next year.
Okay. I don't see any more questions from the board. Is there anyone from the public that would like to address us on this issue? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. This is a resolution.
I'll move resolution number 12-17-18, second interim report as of January 31st, 2018.
We have a motion by Mr. Millar and a second by Mr. Buckman. Any further discussion? Seeing none, Mrs. Holmes?
Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Mr. Buckman?
Aye.
Mr. Questenberry?
Aye.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Aye.
Passes 6-0, one absent.
Let's move on to item number 8.02. This is a resolution 13-17-18 related to school safety. Dr. Prater?
Given the recent tragedy in Florida and our ever persistent efforts in San Luis Coastal to create safe and maintain safe schools as much as we humanly can, this resolution is presented by CSBA and encouraged by them for local districts to adopt this resolution to reinforce the value on doing whatever we can to maintain safe schools and do it as a collective group. So I ask the board to consider this resolution for school safety.
Mr. Millar, do you want to?
Well, I was just going to comment that I'm pleased that the resolution includes the many things our district has undertaken for a long time to do, many of the things that people were suggesting to us, and I'm just pleased to see that we both balance the perceptions of the danger and the risk with our steps and kind of global universal steps to for both a inclusive, safe school climate. School climate's been a mantra of yours, Dr. Prater, since your arrival, and I'm sure that it will continue to be. And I wasn't going to move. I'll reserve that for someone else.
Let me see if is there anybody from the public that would like to address us on this issue? Okay, seeing no one, I'll bring it back. Mr. Quisenberry, you had your light on.
Well, my comment is that in my mind, there's some things in here that don't go far enough, but I will support this resolution.
Okay. Would someone like to make a motion?
Sure, I'll make a motion that we accept resolution 13-17-18.
I'll second it.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Buckman and a second by Mrs. Sheffer. Is there any further discussion from the board? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Mrs. Holmes?
Mr. Buckman?
Aye.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Questenberry?
Yes.
Passes 6-0 and one absent.
Okay, let's move on to item number 9.01. STEAM update, and we have a lot of people. We have Mr. Block and Mr. Calandro who are here, and Mrs. Shields,
Mr. Scaldi.
So please, looks like Mrs. Shields, you're first up to bat.
Thank you. We've got some students for you as well. STEAM is an educational approach to learning that uses science, technology, engineering, the arts, and mathematics as access points for guiding student inquiry, dialogue, and critical thinking. The end results are students who take thoughtful risks, engage in experiential learning, persist in problem solving, embrace collaboration, and work through the creative process. These are the innovators, educators, leaders, and learners of the 21st century. The U.S. Department of Education reports that the number of STEAM jobs in the United States will grow by 14% between 2010 and 2020. Despite this, currently the most popular college majors are not STEAM-related. So how do we get more kids involved in STEAM and create a strong and able workforce? We teach STEAM. We invite and involve our kids in STEAM. So tonight we're going to be providing you with a brief update on our STEAM programs and opportunities both for children in the elementary, middle, and high schools. We'll begin with Mr. Block to tell you a little bit about elementary, and then Mr. Klander will tell us about our secondary programs.
Good evening. Dan Block from Bishop's Peak. I come here tonight to talk about the STEAM programs not only at Bishop's Peak but across the 10 elementary schools in San Luis Coastal. Obviously STEAM, the science, the technology, the math, the arts, they're in our curriculum, but I think all of the principals at the elementary, this is kind of our chance to highlight STEAM, to make it fun, to engage the students, and as Mrs. Shields was saying, to kind of turn them onto careers and maybe just get the tip of the iceberg of what they might learn if they pursued that later on. Our classes take different forms in the elementary across the 10 schools. Some of the things happen during the school day, during units or specific study, or they could be after school clubs and classes. Through the STEAM here, as you look at some of the schools, we have in the area of science, we have environmental education, science and STEAM fairs, energy education. With technology, we have robotics, coding, circuits. Engineering, we have family engineering nights, toy creation. Arts, we have film production, drama, artists in residence. And in math, we have math enrichment, math clubs, and problem-solving classes. In addition to those extra classes that are going on in our elementary schools, we have schools that are embracing project-based learning. FOSS Science is a hands-on curriculum that our teachers are using within their science units. And Cal Poly Learning Lab is something that Bishop's Peak students, as well as students from across our district, have taken advantage of, as well as Cal Poly people coming to our campuses as well. So I'm also going to highlight a little bit about how Bishop's Peak has tackled this. This is our fourth year that we've had a STEAM program going on, and how Bishop's Peak has done it is we've had five-week units, typically. So in our third through sixth grade, students are reshuffled. This year, our third and fourth graders get reshuffled into classes, and our fifth and sixth graders get reshuffled into classes. And those students pick a class, such as hot air ballooning or coding or robotics, and they do it some by interest, although we can't maybe get everybody their first choice, but our students do have a choice in what they're going to take. And then at Bishop's Peak, our TK through third do it a little more closely related to the curriculum that's going on within their classroom. So if they're pooling their outcomes for science, taking some of those FOSS units I mentioned previously, and making sure they carve out time in their day to do those hands-on experiences. I was going to bring some students, but in the interest of time, I filmed them yesterday, so this is a rushed production here. But you're going to hear our sixth graders now. As I mentioned, they've each had eight classes, these 8 5-week sessions. So we're going to hear from 3 sixth graders that represent Mr. Kramer, Mr. Hill, and Ms. Kelly from Bishop's Peak.
My name is Kevin Rodriguez. I'm from Bishop's Peak the Elementary School. I'm in Mr. Kramer's class. For STEAM, I did robotics, flight, coding, hot air balloons, clay animation, art. One of my favorite classes about STEAM was art. We learned about Vincent van Gogh. We learned how to blend colors. We also did a little math thing. We copied the Vincent van Gogh famous art called The Star Night. We had to work with others and all of that. This is a picture that Vincent van Gogh actually really did in the 1890.
Hi, my name is Ivana Davidge, and I am a sixth grader at Bishop's Peak Elementary School. My teacher is Miss Kelly, and over the years, some of my favorite classes have been theater, hot air balloons, painting, flight, and engineering. But one of my overall favorite classes that I've taken is the hot air balloons. We've talked about how the burner heats the air and makes the hot air balloon fly, how we layered the tissue paper for the flying, and how we experimented with the
flying. Hi, my name is Chance Evans. I'm in Mr. Hill's class, and I'm a sixth grade student at Bishop Peak. Some of the STEAM classes I've taken over the years are flight, painting, egg drop, robotics, rockets, magnets, and theater. One of the things I really liked to do in STEAM was flight. In flight, we learned about how weight affects how far the airplane or something will go. And if you're aerodynamic, then it will go faster or farther. Planes fly by creating lift. The wider the surface and lighter it is, the more lift it will have and the easier it will be to fly farther.
So a few students highlighted there. The thing I have to give great kudos to is this is kind of a whole staff thing. From my librarian, we reshuffle. We have specialists that do this. We've had a few volunteers, a few community members teach these classes, but 95% of them have been the teachers that have taken on something extra. So kudos to my Bishop Speak staff.
All right, I'm up. Hopefully you can hear me. I'll try not to cough. So I'm presenting on behalf of all of the secondary schools. So Pacific Beach, which is our credit recovery and alternative program, they've been using a lot of stuff with STEAM over the past couple of years. I know they tried to pick big project-based things. In past years, they've built boats, they've built skateboards. This year, they're working on that small business startup piece. They're using the sustainable agriculture. There's the farm right behind, the community farm right behind Pacific Beach that they use. They bring in a lot of guest artists and guest speakers, and then they've been partnering with Cuesta's successful launch program as well. So we can go to the next one. So Morro Bay High and Slow High, I'm going to start over. I'm going to combine both of them this evening. Let's slow down, John. So Slow High and Morro Bay High continue to build a STEAM-based education platform with facilities, course pathways, and in-class lessons. Through a focus on problem and project-based learning, students are given the opportunity of experiential learning during class time. Our CTE pathways at both high schools offer students a wide array of technical and arts-based education to career opportunities. So if we're going to go to the next one as well. Morro Bay, just on a side note, is working with High Tech High School in San Diego. They've been visiting and collaborating with them. And then both schools, if we switch to the next one, are looking at how we're going to incorporate our lovely new Measure D facilities into the pathways that currently exist and how to extend those pathways to support student learning through project-based learning and STEAM. And the future of the 21st century students has never been brighter. From the middle school perspective, all of our electives that we run try to align with the high school's CTE pathways. The Slow High, I believe, has 10 CTE pathways, sorry, 10 or 11? 10, and our school lines up with 9 of them. We don't have an agricultural piece, but we did just get a garden grant through our school cafeteria that we're looking for a teacher to help take on, which would fill that little agricultural niche very nicely because we do have a school garden. In our classes, most of them are done as electives. Our seventh graders have a quarter-long wheel, and within each quarter-long wheel, they're doing a multitude of projects. And in our industrial tech class, our students do both wood and metal in seventh grade. That also incorporates some computer-aided design and basic drafting skills. Our publications class is our yearbook class, which is fantastic. They're incorporating some really cool video and enhanced augmented reality pieces with our yearbook this year. We have a video production class that there's you can see down in the bottom right-hand corner. That's the video productions class's YouTube page. And if you've never gone to that YouTube page, you can get to it through our website, and it'll say student videos link here. It's wildly entertaining. Student videos on all kinds of social issues for seventh graders. And very, very funny. My sixth grader watches them religiously to laugh at his friends. We have a computer class that does coding, that does some robotics this year. We've added that. Our family and consumer sciences or home economics class is one of our most popular. I always tell parents that the boys are least excited about going into that in the beginning, and they love coming out of it at the end. In addition to our technical electives, we also have our art electives of art, band, choir, and theater. Theater is another one of those classes that students think they're not going to enjoy until they get into it. As far as clubs for after school, for those students who may not be able to participate in some of our electives, we've got a Minecraft club that goes on at lunch. We have a catering club that cooks once a month at least, a makerspace club where students can use all of our shop equipment at any time. We have a sewing club that is very well attended, actually, an animation club that just started this year, and an entrepreneur club that we've partnered with Mission Community Services Center to, and actually I think they just filmed today, they did a little piece for Mission Community Services Center about our entrepreneur club. So these are the ones that are new this year. This year we added to our electives a programmable CNC router in our shop class, programmable robots in our computer class. We have all of our students who are in Family and Consumer Sciences actually have a membership for FCCLA, which is the larger organization, so our students can participate in competitions. And then we added an animation and an entrepreneur club. And the bottom right there is some boys were selling boxes with succulents in them for Valentine's Day. So that was their entrepreneur club project. Los Osos Middle School. Let me back up here to our Los Osos Middle School. Los Osos Middle School continues to build on their STEAM program, starting with their sixth grade program, which all students are enrolled. The seventh grade students who choose STEAM as their elective enroll in a half quarter wheel rotation, so that maximizes their exposure to various 21st century STEAM capacities. And then in eighth grade, students can sign up for semester-long in-depth STEAM experiences. STEAM is not only to robotics and 21st century skills, it's a mix of opportunities in music, band, choir, as well as the performing arts. And I think that's the last one. No, they have their other piece too. They're outside of the school. They're partnerships. They do their drama production right now that is run as an after-school program. Their robotics, they actually have a robotics team, which we do not have this year, but we're getting there. They do a science fair that is a school-wide science fair, and then they do their community collaboration pieces with the California Native Plants, the community makerspace. So their makerspace is part of the larger makerspace for San Luis Obispo, so the community can actually go into there. And then they host the Tough 2, which is a fun challenge activity for families in the community, and then Area 55, which is their annual haunted Area 55 fundraiser that they do every year as well. And that's it.
Any board questions for Mrs. Shields? Or
I just have to add one little piece. You know, it wasn't that many years ago that the board was envisioning what a STEAM school might look like. And you were talking about how that might happen at Los Osos Middle School. I mean, that really was not that many years ago. We had to remind ourselves what all the letters meant, especially the E, and we had to make sure that we included the A. And I hope that you've seen tonight that a lot of work has happened, not only from our secondary schools, but I think following along now our elementary schools, where STEAM is something we do to engage our students, to help prepare them as learners, to get them thinking and innovated. So we'd love to answer any of your questions, right?
Well, I don't see any questions from board members. Thank you very much, Mrs. Shields.
Oh, thank you.
Let's move on to item number 9.02, board appointment to the Educational Foundation, and that would be Mrs. McGrath.
Thank you. Tonight I bring before you this item requesting that you appoint a board member to the Education Foundation. I wanted to just tell you a few reasons why this is important. There's four different reasons that I was thinking about. One is just a collaborative partnership. Although an education foundation is typically established as a separate entity, the work of the foundation is to enhance San Luis Coastal Unified School District. So therefore, the partnership between the two organizations is collaborative in order to accomplish the mission of both organizations. The second one I was thinking about is communication. So I think it's really important that school board members and the superintendent serve on the foundation. That's a typical pattern of foundations that you find within the United States.
And they can serve either as voting members or as ex officio members of the board to even further create a continuity and communication between the school board, administration, and the educational foundation so that they're really working on parallel missions. A deliberate partnership is the other reason. Foundation Innovation, the group that we've hired to kind of help us through this process, not only recommends this partnership, but also suggests that we be deliberate about it, that we really be intentional and set up the partnership with actions. And having a school board member on that foundation board is one of the actions that they say can really help create that type of partnership. The last one that actually I hadn't thought of, but Lori, our consultant, reminded me of is kind of credibility. She said when school board members serve on an education foundation, it tends to lend credibility both internally and externally, that the foundation is aligned to the school district and that it offers vital support to the staff and the students of our schools, which I thought was a great point. It's a way that the school board can kind of give credibility to the foundation and show that this is a cooperative partnership and that this is an effort that we're working on together to better our schools, to work towards opportunities for our staff and students. So tonight I ask for an appointee for our education foundation.
Mrs. Sheffer, but I do have a question. You're asking for a single appointee to the foundation board. Why just one? What's the advantage of one as opposed to more than one member?
Right. Our bylaws currently state that one appointee is what would be placed on there. So that is, you know, the way that our bylaws stated. I think you do want to be careful about proportionment since the superintendent typically sits and a board member. You want to be careful about keeping proportions. So that's the suggestion, is one appointee.
Okay. Thank you. Mrs. Sheffer.
You know, about a year ago, I had the opportunity to attend a meeting of the National School Boards Foundation. Association with Kimberly McGrath and Catherine Eisendrath Rogers. And I was able to observe over the course of a couple of days Dr. Eisendrath Rogers' networking skills and her her close attention that she paid to the topics and the discussions that were had. And it would be, I feel we would be very well served by having her in that role as our representative to serve on the Education Foundation Board.
So are you making that a motion?
I would make that a motion.
Mr. Buffman.
Yeah, I'd like to second that motion. And I just want to say I was able to attend one of the formative meetings of our foundation, and I think Catherine would be an excellent choice.
Before I bring it back to the board for further comment and a vote, is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, I'll take a vote on this. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 6-0.
I sustain.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
Then you know the motion carries 5-0 with one abstention, but the motion carries. Congratulations. Yeah, thank you very much. Let's move on to item number 9.03, approve proposed revisions to board policy 5145.9, student hate motivated behavior. This is a second reading. Mrs. McGrath.
Yes, it is the second reading. Part of your ongoing process of reviewing and updating board policies, this brings forward the second reading of this. It is coincidental that there was the comments related to hate motivated behavior, but I applaud you for consistently looking at your policies and updating those. So in the second reading tonight, we a particular topic in the paragraph there that you see the purple writing, we made the adjustments kind of looking at the district complaint procedures and the timeline was one the particular topic that you asked the subcommittee to review. So what was decided, you can see there, the suggestion is that it remain file a complaint in accordance with district complaint procedures. This would
be in alignment with other student behaviors, for example, sexual harassment, where it also states in accordance with district complaint procedures. So those are procedures that are defined within Ed Code and within our state procedure. So the thought was, let's be careful of not making different timelines per policy. Let's keep some consistency there. So there was also a clarification in the second paragraph there. Instead of the word immediately notify the principal, just more definition was given when it says or designee as soon as possible, but no longer than 24 hours.
Okay. Is there any comment from the board members? Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Would someone like to make a motion on board policy 5145.9? Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
I'm sorry, I should have said this sooner, but I was just trying to find my notes of what was said earlier. I didn't notice, Kimberly, whether there's a statement in here about whether this would also be available on the website, this information.
Yes, uniform complaint procedures are available from a state level. Then also, I happened to look at it today in case you had asked questions about it. It's under personnel and under complaint forms, so you can find that form there if needed.
So this would address that concern that was raised earlier in terms of being able to locate.
You know, there's something going on with the search aspect of it, because I tried to search. I found it under the personnel tab, so we'll look into why it's not showing up as a search.
Okay.
But it is on our website.
Okay. Thank you.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers, would you like to make that motion?
Yes, I would like to make a motion of approving item number BP 5145.9.
Okay. We have a motion. Do we have a second? Mr. Quisenberry has made the second. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Let's move on to item number 9.04, Measure D, amendments to the leaseback contracts with Acme Construction, Mano Construction, and Wysong Construction. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, so I did speak with our attorney, DWK, and we can have these all as one agenda item instead of having a multiple agenda items for each one. So I just wanted the board to know that, and that's why they're together. There's really two key changes to this. The first one is there was a change in the law regarding skilled and trained workforce. So in the past, it was kind of ratcheted up really quickly in terms of any leaseback contracts. So what we're asking the board to do is to approve the new law that was passed, which doesn't ratchet it up quite as quickly. So we still have to have skilled and trained workforce. They still have to be part of the job. You'll see all of the paperwork that goes along with that regulation that the contractor has to fill out and has to turn it to the district prior to being paid. So that's basically the first aspect of the change with each of these amendments. And really, the changes I'm speaking of are the same changes for every single amendment that you see tonight.
Thank you.
Same exact thing for each and every leaseback contract we currently have.
Okay.
So the second, go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
So the second part of this is, as we dove into our first leaseback agreement, there were a few areas, allowances, use of contingencies, as well as change orders, that just weren't clearly defined as much as we wanted them to be. So in particular with what contractors could or could not charge for as and what the difference between an allowance versus a contingency versus what a change order is. So Mr. Holcomb and myself went through those contracts together, really tried to make just a few wording changes, add a few lines. We vetted that through DWK, through our attorney, to make those changes. And hopefully this just provides a clearer contract for us to move forward. So again, we can go through those, but there's really just a few, three or four, that are part of that.
Mr. Millar.
And so those changes to existing contracts have been accepted and approved by the other parties to those contracts?
Yes.
Okay. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Would someone like to make a motion? Mrs. Sheffer?
I will make a motion to accept the amendments to the leaseback contracts with Acme Mano and Wysong Construction.
Seconded by Mr. Quisenberry. Sorry, Mr. Buckman. Is there any further discussion? All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Let's move on to the action consent agenda. Please let me know if you would like to pull an item. Item 10.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 10.02, certification to the State Board of Education for temporary athletic coaches. 10.02 is pull, okay. 10.03, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 10.04, approval of purchase orders and CalCard purchases. 10.05, approval of warrants and payrolls. 10.05. I'm going to ask that we pull 10.06. 10.07, approval of foreign exchange organizations. And 10.08, approval of field study trip requests, Morro Bay High School Choir to the Reno Jazz Festival. Congratulations. Is there anybody, any further discussion on those items? Seeing none, I'd like to take a motion for 10.01, 10.03, 4, 6, I'm sorry, 10.7 and 8, not 10.6. Would someone like to make a motion? Moved by Mr. Millar. So that would be 10.01, 10.03, 10.04, 10.07, and 10.08. Okay, any second? Well, can we have a second? Mr. Buckman, would you like to second that motion?
Oh, sure.
Been waiting all night. Yeah, all right. So we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Let's move on to 10.02. That would be Mr. Quisenberry.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to comment that we've had presentations by the athletic directors that all our coaches have been certified in first aid and CPR, certified also by the CIF through programs that talk about good coaching practices and so forth. And I just want to make sure that the public knows that we do have people that are trained in first aid and CPR, and we have all of our athletic coaches trained in those things. So having said that, I'd like to move approval of item 10.02.
And I will second that. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Let's move on to item 10.05. Mr. Millar.
I have to recuse myself because my wife is employed by PMSM Architects.
Okay. Would someone like to make a motion on that? Mr. Buckman. Anybody want a second?
I'll second.
Seconded by Mrs. Sheffer. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. 5-0 with one abstention. I want to talk about 10.06 contributions to the district, and I'd like to draw the attention of folks to the last item, an anonymous gift for $2,000 to reimburse the cost of conferences, and I wanted to thank that anonymous donor for that generous contribution. It really helps, and it really shows a commitment to the professional learning that our staff needs to have. Let's move on to item 11. Oh, yeah, I better make a motion, hadn't I? Thank you very much, Mr. Sheffer. I move approval of item number 10.06. Seconded by Mr. Quisenberry. Any further discussion? Seeing none, I'll bring it back. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Let's move on to item number 11.02. Is there any recommendations or discussion on advanced agenda? Mr. Quisenberry.
Although we've been over this many, many times, I would just like us to once again clarify, and it could be, doesn't have to be on the advanced agenda, but the programs that we have in place to deal with the diversity of our students and with our policies and procedures as far as dealing with bullying and harassment and so forth.
Are you suggesting a summary right up in Friday notes?
That would be perfect.
And if so, could I have this is a crazy week, so can I get it to you the following week?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Anything else? All right, let's move on to reports by board members. Who'd like to start? Mr. Buckman. Ellen.
I would like, I made a couple of school visits last week to Los Osos Middle School, where I met with, actually it was a morning when the principals and assistant principals also from Morro Bay High School were there, because the discussion was transition from Los Osos Middle School to the high school. So there were parents attending that with their questions, and a very good presentation made by both principals discussing how that works. And then I visited some classrooms with Andre Illig and was particularly impressed by visiting the humanities classroom, which I found very interesting in what they're studying. And we visited several other classrooms as well. So that was fun. And then later in the week, I went to Morro Bay High School and had a look at the current state of construction and the very exciting things that will be going on with the arts and the gallery and the photography, and then visited a couple of classrooms there, several classrooms there as well. So thank you to the administration for shepherding me around, and it was an impressive couple of days.
Thank you. Mr. Buckman.
Thank you. I keep thinking, but we just did a great resolution, and this has just been bugging me. So I think it's just a really sad situation when teachers and school staff have to become first responders. And I just have to say that. I think we all want students learning, and I think we all want teachers standing in front of classes and not standing in front of bullets. I think it's important for us to support the students this Wednesday as they walk out for 17 minutes, and I would urge every one of us to take 17 seconds at a minimum and think about all the people that suffered in Parkland. And if we took 17 minutes and we took that for each child and each staff member that had been killed in this country in school violence, it would take days, and I don't want to think about it for days. So I really urge everyone to also march on March 24th here in San Luis Obispo. And I did have the opportunity to attend Los Ranchos School for a first look at what the Cal Poly students did in renderings for the use of their school courtyard. I have to tell you, it was absolutely outstanding. And what was amazing was the students, just the questions were just right on point, and they just did a great job. And I also did get a chance to attend the Central Coast Committee for School Inclusiveness.
Okay, and I'll just close off, and I just want to say that I, too, attended the Los Ranchos. I was able to go to buy the Los Ranchos project, and I was really impressed. I was loved the fact that the Cal Poly students really gave a lot of thought to ways that the courtyard or the quad area at Los Ranchos could be changed and, frankly, improved. The questions from the students were really right on point, and the responses from the Cal Poly students were great. I was able to read Across the World at Hawthorne, and I got to read By the Great Horn Spoon, one of my favorite kid-lit books, actually a fourth-grade literature book about the California Gold Rush. Having just returned from Patagonia, I got to read the chapter about how the protagonists went around the horn and how dangerous it was. It was really a great, great fun experience. And I wanted to thank Michelle Hedrick for asking me to come. She puts on a great project every year. She did a little video, actually a little slideshow, showing all the people in the community who she was able to get to come and read for her classes and her schools. And then I had an opportunity to go over to San Luis Obispo High School last week, and I spent quite a bit of time talking to Mr. O'Connor about site safety and the Tiny Tiger Parent Participation Preschool. I really appreciated his time. I also want to thank Mr. Simon, Mr. Lemkuhl, and Mrs. Washmuth for allowing me to visit their classes. I'd like to say I was particularly interested in in the discussion in Mr. Simon's AP History class. They were talking about Manzanar. And the level of discussion among the students was just brilliant, and I really appreciated it. And then Mr. Lemkuhl was talking to his students. They were talking about the importance of diesel mechanics, which you got to agree is just a great profession and a great job. And then Mrs. Washmuth getting ready to start the next trimester of Tiny Tigers. So I don't see anybody else with a light on, and I'm going to say that our meeting is adjourned until Thursday at 10 o'clock in this room, where we will be discussing site safety as well as Measure D upgrades. We'll see you then.